This is Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. In the episode today, we'll be talking a lot of news, specifically a lot about the Met Gala, a lot about some upcoming video games, and per usual, music and TV and comic books and much more. That's coming up right here on Advanced D&D on WUKY. Well, Dan, it is pretty fun that I can say that we're doing episode 29. We're almost at 30, believe it or not, which is, I think, something fun. But let's go ahead and get right into it and dive into the news this week.
Yeah, can't go a week without talking something COVID. I think Joe Biden and his administration has finally gotten to the really, really fed up dad stage of dealing with the pandemic. And this is a dad who does not believe in spankings. Finally, maybe just loosening the belt a little bit and raising an eyebrow a little bit to try to get a little participation in this vaccine situation. So the new thing, and let's not call it a mandate because it's not actually the right term. What he is saying is he wants not just federal employees, but also private companies. With any company that has over 100 employees needs to have their employees vaccinated, or those unvaccinated employees need to have weekly COVID tests. And it really is, you know, there were incentives, there were like bonuses people were paying out to, you know, get vaccinated, and just all the begging and pleading that we've had for the last, you know, 6 months has just, you know, it's only affected a certain number of people, and there are still so many holdouts. So after a while, you get tired of waving carrots, and you still start having to wave the stick. DeBron, do you think this will work?
I'm curious to see what will happen. On one hand, you know, I still think that even though they tried to be very specific and detailed, I think that there is a little bit of ambiguity in some of the language. I know at as far as UK is concerned, prior to this, President Capiluto had made a decision very similar to this. Basically, if you're not vaccinated, you got to get tested weekly. And, you know, it's almost a mandate, but it's not because the you basically are dealing with the inconvenience of it all. So I'm curious to see where it goes. As for whether or not I think it will stick, well, there is precedence in this because something similar happened with the smallpox vaccine. So I don't know, but I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where you look at how history was and you're like, well, this worked out the last time, but people are not acting in any way that is rational right now. So I think my answer to that question is I don't know.
Yeah. And this will definitely get challenged in the courts, as everything gets challenged in the courts these days. But the authority that he is trying to operate under is he's using OSHA and talking about it in terms of workplace safety. OSHA is the federal agency that oversees workplace safety, whether it's, you know, lead or, you know, unsafe working conditions. And basically, we're talking about the pandemic and infectiousness as an unsafe working condition. So it'd be a very interesting sort of workaround, and we'll see if that works. In local political news, Representative Kelly Flood, who is a Democrat from District 75, which includes a chunk of Lexington, is not seeking re-election. And at the same time, there's a friend of mine named May Surimac out of Berea, Kentucky, who has just clinched the Democratic's nomination for the special election in District, I believe it's 89 or 98, that covers parts of Madison, Montgomery, and Jackson counties to replace the disgraced outgoing Republican Representative Robert Goforth, who some of you will remember was accused of brutalizing his wife and then also getting reelected after those allegations. He is finally resigning, so the governor is calling a special election. So that's 7 weeks away. But, you know, that and thinking about Kelly Flood's not running for reelection, the Democrats in Frankfurt are a super minority. they have very, very little power to kind of do push any of their agenda. So it makes me wonder, somebody, any Democratic representative in that body right now, there can't be that much incentive to stay on and fight the fight. And it can't be that much incentive for people who want to run for a state office to want to, even if they win, join a body where they're going to be a super minority, you know?
Yeah. So on one hand, I think that, you know, Kelly Flood's been in office for 13 years, and 13 years is a long time to do anything. And I think that, you know, it's always nice when, you know, when folks will move aside to let kind of the next generation of leaders, you know, move forward. So like I kind of understand, and I feel like I see where a lot of these things are coming from. And my hope is, that there are people who feel like, oh, this is a seat, you know, with someone who, you know, for years ran unopposed, and was appreciated by both Democrats and Republicans. You know, so I hope that someone, you know, can feel inspired to maybe run for that seat, and, you know, maybe it be somebody who had never really been in that kind of space before. You know, we're in a time where representation matters, and I mean, representation has always mattered, but especially now, you know, we're seeing it in media, we're seeing it, you know, in some political circles. So I just hope that, you know, with everything that you just said, that there are still people that feel like, you know what, I could probably do this. Maybe, you know, maybe my voice can inspire some change. So that's kind of my two cents on that.
Yeah, let's hope at least. In national politics, California, boy, oh boy, we are recording this on Tuesday the 14th. It is the special recall election in California, successfully mounted by Republican forces to oust Governor Gavin Newsom. Basically, the recall laws in California are such that it's very easy, and there's a very low bar to try to recall folks. And basically, every governor, Republican or Democrat, there have been recall attempts against them. Usually, they're unsuccessful. The last time we had a successful one was against Gray Davis, which ushered in Arnold Schwarzenegger. This time, it's against Gavin Newsom, which a lot of Republicans had a lot of issues with how he handled the pandemic, which means he handled it, in my mind, fairly well, in that he trusted the science and put down some very hardcore restrictions. A number of factors led to this recall happening, one of which was a very poor decision on the governor's part to, after having told folks to stay home, don't congregate, don't go out, he was seen and filmed having a fancy-ass dinner at the French Laundry, one of the highest-end, you know, restaurants in Northern California, basically painted him as a very out-of-touch hypocrite, and there was no real good way to spin around that. So today is the day as we record, and by the time this episode airs, we may actually know what has happened in that recall election. It only takes 12% the signature requirement is only 12% of the people who voted in the last election have to sign the recall. So if he is recalled, it could be by a tiny minority of the voting populace, and a tiny minority of the voting populace will be choosing the next governor, which makes you question how democratic is this process, right? And of course, DeBron, you can speak on this a little bit. It has broader implications beyond California.
Well, one thing to also note is that, you know, kind of going back to that previous election, when I was a senior in high school, there was Prop 8, which was the proposition to legalize gay marriage in the state of California. The way in which the law was written, it was very ambiguous as to which way would lead to the legalization of gay marriage. And opponents of that utilized that to continue to spread misinformation, and ultimately it did not pass. And I think a similar thing is happening with this recall. on one hand, like on the ballot, you have the first option is, do you want to have a recall? That's the first question. You could check yes or no. If you check yes, then you go down to the ballot and you can choose who you want to be the next governor of California. But if you hit no, then you don't, no need apply for that. And I think that the way that that is written, especially within the laws of the recall, it's very ambiguous. And we'll see what happens. I do hope that people are at least informed in that before going into the the ballot box. But the larger implication of this. So in this last presidential election, the Democrats took over majority of the House and Senate. And that is a very big deal, but the potential for this the ramifications are very large because Larry Elder, who is one of the people who is running in the recall, has openly said that he will replace Dianne Feinstein and appoint a Republican, replace her seat, and then that would shift the balance of power back to the Republicans. So, again, with everything we've talked about, from the way that the laws are written to the ambiguity, and, there's a lot of misinformation going around as well, in addition to the fact that even if Gavin Newsom is not recalled, it is possible that, that there will be some recourse from this. So we will see what happens. Like Dan said, the election is happening right now as we are recording this podcast. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's also interesting, if not predictable, that Larry Elder, along with Trump and other Republicans, are already pre-claiming election fraud on this, because it's a great, I don't know, this reminds me of like whenever you played like schoolyard sports in school, where it was never about the game. It was always about who's cheating, what are the rules, why aren't you, that wasn't fair, no, that was not a foul, all this stuff. But I don't think, even as children, we ever went into a kickball game saying, this game is rigged. Like before we even started playing, to say this game is rigged, to preempt my loss, to be able to say when I lose, this is because this game is rigged. I have a larger sort of question, and this may be an entire hour. I will preface this by saying, obviously, Black people are not a monolith. What are your thoughts on Larry Elder?
Well, to use a Negro spiritual, all skin folk ain't kinfolk. That's pretty much it. Black people are not a monolith, as you can see with Larry Elder, a person who does not necessarily even believe in slavery, like that it happened, and that it that the ramifications of that are a big deal.
Yeah. Speaking of kinfolk that we can probably agree on, this week we saw the untimely loss of Michael K. Williams, best known for playing, I would argue the most memorable character on one of the best TV shows ever made, The Wire. He played Omar Little, the stick-up dude who probably produced some of the best memorable, most memorable taglines, in that show. He also has had a very storied career of all kinds of other roles, everything from comedy, little cameos in Community, to Boardwalk Empire, to most recently Lovecraft Country. I remember he had a tiny, tiny part in the Cormac McCarthy adaptation of The Road. Just such a charismatic, amazing actor, just the most memorable face you've ever seen. And it's interesting watching, people sort of evolve and grow, even just physically. Most recent iterations of his style, he had this tremendous like white beard that just made such a great sort of contrast with his face. I mean, he's the kind of guy that I wanted to see in everything. Like, this is a guy who I would have loved to get thrown in any part of the Marvel universe, or Star Wars or the Game of Thrones series or any number of indie films. So a real loss, because it still felt like he was kind of at the height of his career.
Well, I'm glad that you said Star Wars. First of all, you know, Michael K. Williams was an amazing actor, an incredible voice actor, and just his presence, like, you felt it. But one of my thoughts when I heard of his passing was, so, you know, the film Solo had so many problems. You know, there were a lot of rewrites and, you know, ultimately, like, Lord and Miller were kind of booted from the movie and Ron Howard was brought in to finish the movie. And Michael K. Williams was originally supposed to be the Dryden Voss character, but there was supposed to be a bunch of, like, CGI and things like that. And one of my first thoughts when I went to go see Solo was, okay, if this movie gets a sequel, I want to see Michael K. Williams, you know, at that same character, give, you know, rewrite his character or whatever to give him a different backstory to make him fit. But I wanted to see Michael K. Williams in a Star Wars movie. And I hope that if there is any footage of his performance, that we'll be able to see it, or, you know, whether it be a you know, a special feature or something. I would really love to see that, because I really think that he poured his heart and soul into every role that he had, and he brought so many different things that you would not expect. So yeah, that those are kind of my thoughts on Michael K. Williams.
Yeah. Big loss indeed. Hard, even, you know, folk, you know, geeks like us, we love to imagine what could have been and different casting choices, and definitely a tinge of sadness when we think about all the potential that was there. Boy, oh boy, do I love the Met Gala, and did we miss it last year? I honestly don't even entirely know what the Met Gala is, except that a whole bunch of celebrities and pseudo celebrities put on the most expensive and ridiculous outfits ever and do this little red carpet or beige carpet walk. So, you know, we skipped the year 2020, and this year we had it again. And the theme was something like fashion in America. I don't even know. It was something kind of generic. But there were some standouts. I'll just go breeze through a whole bunch of them. Haley Steinfeld, who we will talk about in a minute in the new Hawkeye series, I didn't recognize her. I did a double take, had to look again. She looked like Posh Spice from the 90s. Lil Nas X, of course, bringing his game, so much game. He had three separate outfits, I think layered. Like, he first had this giant, like he was like a space pope. And then underneath it was like golden armor. And then underneath it was like golden leisure suit for a space king. It was just friggin' amazing. If Lil Nas X never produced music again and just did red carpet appearances, we would be a better planet for it. Let's see, AOC had a very, in her way, political dress with very large letters that said tax the rich. And then she showed up with the black designer of that dress as her companion. Iman, the supermodel from the 90s, just absolutely destroyed it with this giant feather regalia dress. Again, you know, it's the kind of thing like, if we've got time to put her into Black Panther 3, let's do that somewhere. A$AP Rocky came out in this outfit that looked like he was covered in kids' cereal. I don't know what was happening there. I loved it. Billie Eilish came out looking very classically femme, very Marilyn Monroe, which is a great contrast to her usual, much more understated vibe. She was wearing Oscar de la Renta, and normally I don't care who people are wearing, but she apparently agreed to wear Oscar de la Renta if they would stop using fur. So talk about using your clout to make positive changes. So kudos to that kid. Kim Kardashian dressed in this weird all black situation, which is okay with me because I would like to see less of Kim Kardashian. So we got that. Pete Davidson's little outfit, he said he was inspired to look like a slutty nun. But to me, he looked more like Dan Levy cosplaying as Hillary Clinton. It was a black and white power suit situation. and then with his little like hairy, scrawny legs poking out of the bottom. Pretty funny. Dan Levy himself, I was a little disappointed. It was very out there. He had this floofy outfit on that had like a world map on it. You could do better, Dan. That's all I'm saying. And my favorite part with this year and every year is probably so much gender bending. In America, we don't really bat an eye to women dressing in masculine clothing ever since Marlene Dietrich, and probably before that, it's been considered sexy. But men dressing in traditionally feminine or women's clothing has always been so, so much more touchy. And this year we had folks like Jeremy Pope and Troy Sivan both dressing in very gender-bent outfits. And we've had seen that in previous years. Lil Nas X is a great proponent of that. So kudos to them for really pushing and stretching the boundaries of, you know, what gender is all about.
So there you have it, Dan Wu with his breakdown of the Met Gala.
A short version.
Yeah. You know, so one thing that I will say about the Met Gala is I remember a couple years ago after Black Panther came out, one thing that I didn't even know what it was at the time, like what I was looking at when I was looking through these pictures, but that there was a period where like every like black celebrity that was like on fire at that time, they all were hanging out together at the Met Gala, and got some pretty great candid pictures. But yeah, no, it was cool. And did you see Frank Ocean with the Shrek looking baby?
Yeah. Yeah, do yourselves a favor. When you're done listening to this podcast, just Google Met Gala 2021. And there are a couple of great news sites that have just amazing pictures. Like, give yourself a good 30 minutes to peruse it. You won't regret it.
Well, shifting to the Video Music Awards, kind of speaking about Lil Nas X for a second, if you have not seen photos of him, he wore this like pink dress to the VMAs, but he had his hair like Randy Watson from Coming to America. So it was pretty awesome. But my question is, MTV celebrated its 40th anniversary, a couple weeks ago. And on the 40th anniversary, there was nothing but Rob Dyrdek's Ridiculousness, which begs the question, if the music television is supposed to have the Music Video Awards, what's the point if you're not still doing that? I don't know. I mean, like, I appreciate that the VMAs are still a thing. There are some really great pop culture moments, but I'm also just kind of like, what y'all doing?
You know who should be hosting the VMAs? YouTube. I mean, that's where they are anymore. One thing I will say, with the onset of YouTube and the decline of sort of MTV as a cultural juggernaut, what this has meant is the video form has completely exploded. You could have a 15-minute music video that's a short film if you want, because you don't have to worry about it airing on a TV station. You can have as much profanity as you care to have. And I feel like that also speaks to sort of, as radio airplay has kind of died off commercially, that you can release and have huge hit singles with all kinds of profanities, all kinds of language. You think about the song WAP. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way that would have been a big hit in the mid-90s. It just wouldn't have been played anywhere. So in that sense, I think there's been a lot of freedom from detaching from TV networks and things like that. But yeah, MTV, honestly, it's they're just hanging on to tradition is the only thing. But relevance, certainly not.
I think you hit the nail on the head with YouTube, because I love The Masked Singer, getting to guess who the different celebrities are is always fun. But I think it was maybe two seasons ago they had a couple YouTubers, and I was like, I have no idea who these people are. Am I just old now? So yeah, I think that definitely is the future. Well, let's move on into music. A couple of releases came out this week that very much were bops for me. There is a musician out of Chicago. Her name is Tasha, and she released a single called Perfect Wife. It is like this kind of throwback, like 60s vibe. More of like the somewhere of a blend between like electric music and folk. It's pretty dope. And then Ari Lennox released a new single this week as well called Pressure. And for my favorite section of this show, this week in Anderson .Paak. Well, the VMAs might have been, you know, irrelevant for some people, but they were not for Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars, as Silk Sonic won Best R&B, Best R&B Video, along with a VMA for Best Editing for Leave the Door Open. Rightfully so, especially if you're just going to go off of that look that Anderson .Paak gives in the music video where he turns his shoulder. But that is this week in Anderson .Paak. Moving into TV and movies, what you got for us this week, Dan?
Well, I want to start with something that's fairly old. It's from 2014, 7 years ago, and it was a one-shot short that I think originally came with, this is before Disney Plus, so it originally, I believe, came as a bonus feature on one of the Thor movies, maybe? It's called All Hail the King, and it is a little short that answers the question that I don't know many people had at the time, is what happened to Trevor Slattery? Trevor Slattery, for those of you who don't remember, was the fake Mandarin in the third Iron Man movie, where, you know, he was this, you know, world conquering villain that turned out to be just an out of work British actor, played just amazingly by Ben Kingsley. So this little short picks up from there, where Trevor Slattery is now in jail, but kind of a celebrity in federal prison and protected by, you know, various folks. And then an interviewer comes to interview him about his life and his story. And I'm, you know, we'll do spoilers because this thing is 7 years old and it's on Disney Plus now. The interviewer turns out to be an agent of the Ten Rings. He kills the people around him. Trevor thinks he's there to kill him, but he's actually there to deliver him back to the real Mandarin, quote unquote Mandarin. And then basically for 7 years, they didn't do anything with that plot line. They just kind of dropped it and we kind of forgot about it. And this, you know, last couple of weeks when Shang-Chi came out, they basically retconned that whole story. And here Trevor Slattery appears as a hostage of Wenwu, aka the real Mandarin. So it was fun revisiting that little short that I had completely forgotten about. And I'm always amazed at Marvel writers and producers and creators' ability to keep all of these threads straight and be able to like tie back and forth in this giant, just intricate web. So kudos for those of you who are Marvel fans and Marvel completists, definitely check that out.
Yeah, it makes me think of you saying that. My first thought was yes, except for the producers of Spider-Man Far From Home, or not Far From Home. Spider-Man Far From Home. At the beginning of the movie, you know, they do the throwback to the flashback to the Battle of New York, and you know, then it says like 7 years later, which it actually wasn't. But yeah, I think that you know, and Kevin Feige was like, yeah, no, they were wrong. But you know, I haven't seen a corrected version. But kudos to Ben Kingsley. He's just an incredible actor. And for him to take a character like Trevor and just like, I mean, I thought that the Trevor plot in Iron Man 3 was hilarious and a little campy. But like, I feel like I appreciated his performance in Iron Man 3 more after watching Shang-Chi, just because it's like, okay, like, no, this dude like really is just leaning into it. And man, Ben Kingsley is just really amazing.
Yeah, if somehow they had originally just did a Mandarin character, aside from the problematic aspects of it, Ben Kingsley playing that character straight would also have been pretty amazing. But just the fact that he was a hired imposter just took it to a whole another meta level and really allows him to shine in a comedic way that he hasn't always gotten to. Last time I remember him having that sort of energy was Sexy Beast, I think. where he had that sort of combination of menace and dark humor.
What an incredible actor. For me this week, was catching up on the DC show Titans, which, again, I highly recommend. It just the way they're able to write these characters, because they don't have the constraints of network television, is definitely a plus. Very similar to kind of the way that some of the Netflix series were for Marvel. I really, really would highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. I will be honest with you, Dan. I am one episode behind on Reservation Dogs. Caught up last night on the two episode 5 and 6. And I want to talk about episode 6 for just a minute. That episode had me in my feels. Willie Jack and her father go out hunting, and then it's this whole thing is around the loss of their relative, and the Sturgill Simpson bluegrass version of Oh Sarah at the end just brought me to tears. I love this show. It is so beautifully written. And I was telling my mom about it yesterday, that like a lot of the references that, we've talked about this before. A lot of the references I feel are very specific to indigenous culture, but also kind of intersect with, black culture and Southern culture and all these other things. So like, you don't have to be indigenous to enjoy the show. But it is just a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah. Yeah, that relatability is there, I think, particularly for any sort of marginalized community, because, I remember one conversation she has with her father while they're sitting there in their deer stand is she was like, wait, I thought this was our land. And he says, no, I mean, it used to be a long time ago, but great grandpa sold it off to somebody and now it's not ours. And she's like, you think they'll give it back? Very naively. What I found also hilarious was there was a quick little shot of these two white hunters walking through in the background, and they were just throwing out like cultural keywords. It was so funny. They were like, I forgot what they were. It was like oil, real estate, cancel culture, them gays, like literally just throwing out words, which I thought was pretty hilarious. That episode and the one right before it, episode 5, that focuses on cheese doing a ride along with the reservation a police officer / light horseman. The character's name is Big. Both those episodes, I love it when a show branches off a little bit to explore sort of secondary or other characters, or just give other characters a little bit of focus, which I appreciate, because these two episodes, we barely saw the other three kids. And both of them ventured into magical realism territory and did it in such a way that didn't take you out of the show. You weren't necessarily quite sure, is this reality? Is this a perceived reality of just one of the characters? And it kind of doesn't matter. And it spoke to that idea of, everyone's reality is a little bit different, and what you perceive and what you think and how you become a person, so much of it is based on the stories that you tell as a family, as a people. So just like such a fun show, such a funny show, and just so, so resonant, and the kind of show that leaves you thinking about it for hours after.
Yeah. And I also appreciate that Cheese got his own episode after not even being in the episode prior. So that was also nice. Well, moving into Marvel What If, Dan, I know you're going to hear me say this again. I was in my feels because this most recent episode of What If featured Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, and the Marvel Zombies episode was a lot of fun, especially if you are into horror. It, they kind of got all the beats and everything, but I'm a little sad because I know that we're only going to get Chadwick for 4 episodes. And so that's already 2 now. It made me emotional, especially when he, was talking about death as T'Challa, knowing that while he was recording this, he was in the process of leaving us.
Yeah. The line that he says is something like, I don't know that I can even repeat it. that it doesn't matter if somebody's gone. It's how you remember them or how they stay with you. From about 5 minutes into that episode, I was like, I need this to be a full-length feature, like right now. The zombie genre is one of my favorites. Marvel is one of my favorites. And the two colliding worked out exactly the way I wanted. The fact of the non-zombie team was so weird and random. And I don't know if this is just like who they could get to do the voices, because they brought that one random dude from Ant-Man, the guy with the Eastern European accent, who I think is the guy who plays Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad, David Dasmalkian. Just such a, like, did not expect him to be on the team. Between that episode and the episode with Doctor Strange? No, what was the episode? Yeah. It made me realize shrinking power is so amazing. Like, I never thought of it as being, like, that potentially powerful that it can take out. Actually, no, it wasn't the Doctor Strange episode. It was the episode where the Avengers were getting taken out one by one, that time by a disgruntled Hank Pym. And then this time, the MVP of the zombie episode was Janet Van Dyne. The giant Janet collapsing into a pile of zombies. Zombie movies, if done right, somehow can be like so heartfelt that it's very unexpected. When Okoye got grabbed up, that was a moment. I thought the Tom Holland character was great, the way he's written, that sort of, it kind of peeled back, and they even questioned it explicitly, like, how are you so optimistic all the time? And he's like, I've lost so many people, like, you can't help but have to be. Just wrenching. So I don't know, like, when it ended, I was the most upset, because there were other episodes where it ended, I was like, okay, that was a cool idea. And here it was like, where are the other 9 episodes of this? So Marvel, if you're listening, we could do this.
Yeah, and as somebody who suffers from depression, that's exactly why I love Spider-Man. Through everything, he tries to stay optimistic. Well, moving into games and hobbies, I know that there is something that you have waited quite a long time that finally showed up.
Yeah, so some of you know I've been collecting Marvel Legends figures. It's this line of action figures from Hasbro. Really, really fun, articulated. I think they're like, what, 8 6/8-inch? Figures of Marvel characters. And the one I've been hunting down for a long time is Jubilee. This is, for some folks, for comic book folks, would be a little bit of a deep cut. She was a character that originated in 1989 in the X-Men. She was a young, like teenage, Chinese-American character born to rich immigrant parents, but then her parents got killed in something supervillain related. She was a mutant. She is a mutant, has these sort of, you know, fun sort of, I don't know, like blast abilities. I don't even know how to describe it exactly. Like lots of lights and whatnot coming out of her. But she's such a fun character, and she's such a fun Asian American character. And I think that's why I glommed onto her, because if you look at the early years of Marvel, and I'll talk about this a little bit in the book section, the Asian characters were always Asian characters, not Asian Americans. They were always foreign. And B, they all spun off of tropes of Kung Fu or Fu Manchu or samurais. And Jubilee had nothing to do with any of that. She was just a modern kid. She would have fit in perfectly in the movie Clueless. Her outfit consisted of, looked like some random thrift store or boutique finds, finished off with a big yellow, you know, raincoat and fun pink glasses, and she's always blowing bubble gum. Just such a great character. Anyway, so I finally found the action figure, the Marvel Legends figure of her. I am going to not retire from collecting, but I'm going to take a little sabbatical because I found my white whale. It's making me very happy.
I'm very happy for you. And as a younger fan, For myself, I have a lot of love for Jubilee as well, because in the animated X-Men show, most of the storylines were kind of told through her perspective. And if not, like, she at least was the anchor in this story around mostly adults for kids to be able to kind of latch on to, because she was the, you know, the youngest and newest person on the team at that time. Well, I'm very excited as well to say this. PlayStation had their little announcement presentation for the future of their video games, and there is something that was announced, Dan, that I have been waiting for and has been it's been speculated for like the last 15 years. But Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic. Lucasfilm and Aspyre are going to team up to remake the video game for the PlayStation 5. If you are not familiar with the story, it takes place 4,000 years prior to the films, and in the middle of this galactic war where two Sith lords, Darth Revan and Darth Malak, are basically just wreaking havoc and over the galaxy. Now, if you have not played the game, if you don't know the story, I would say please do your very best to avoid spoilers, because it is one of the best Star Wars stories. I'm talking all Star Wars media. It is one of the best Star Wars stories out there, and it very much deserves to have an updated framework with mechanics and graphics and things. And one of the things that they did say is that they are going to stay true and just update the game. They're not going to change the story in any way. So I'm super excited about that. And this is my Met Gala moment for this episode. Insomniac announced that they are going to release a sequel to their Spider-Man game. They have two out right now. One is Spider-Man, and the other one is Spider-Man Miles Morales. They're available for the PS4, but the sequel now is going to include Miles Morales in the main game along with Venom. And again, I am super excited for these things, because Spider-Man, the most recent Spider-Man game, was very similar to that Spider-Man 2, where it was very open world and a lot of fun. So yes, I don't want to go on and on and on about it, but I'm very excited that these things are happening.
Nice.
Well, you've been reading some fun comics lately, right?
I don't know about reading. I attempted to read. I pulled up after Shang-Chi came out. Of course, I got interested in seeing its origins. Shang-Chi was a comic book that started in 1973, written and created by two white dudes. And it ran for about 10 years. So I picked up a couple of sort of compendiums of original Shang-Chi stuff. And boy, oh boy, is that stuff hard to read. I did not read it. I just kind of flipped through and looked for the most problematic pieces of dialogue and action. It was rough. He originally was the son of Fu Manchu. He spouted very typically fortune cookie type stuff. There was literally an episode or an issue that said something like the fortune cookie, like it was a fortune pulling out a fortune cookie, and it said, "Your fate is death." And I was like, oh my God. So with knowing that, it's even more impressive how well the Shang-Chi movie came out, ditching all of that baggage and kind of starting fresh. So kudos to that. The Shang-Chi old comics, it's worth a gander just for morbid curiosity, honestly, but real tough to actually read through.
I also wanted to ask you about this. I read kind of in the trivia of the Shang-Chi movie that Brandon Lee had originally attempted to make a Shang-Chi movie in the 90s, but it didn't happen. And when things kind of started going, in that direction, he had ultimately passed away. Had you heard that story?
I have not. That's pretty amazing. I'm very happy it didn't get made in the 90s. There are so many things that, can you imagine them trying to make Black Panther in the 90s? It would be something that we would be shaking our heads about and, you know, waiting for remakes. So in some ways, we live in the times we live in, and I'm very happy to be in those times where we can see this sort of genuine progress in representation.
Representation matters. I feel like we got to say that at least once on this show. Well, moving into a thing that you and I both love, which is food. This week, I made some pan-seared tuna steaks and got the I think I finally figured out a really good way to get things going, because usually when I pan-sear fish, you know, I'll flip it back and forth until, you know, I think it's okay. But this time around, I was trying to do too many things at once and got the top of the fish extra crispy. And this was a game changer.
Yeah. One thing I'll tell people when I advise them, when you're trying to sear anything, whether it's salmon or a steak or mushrooms, leave it alone. When you first put it in there, make sure that pan is hot. Make sure your oil is hot. Make sure you're getting a little smoke coming off. Put your meat down. Put your steak down. Put your tuna down. Leave it alone. You will be tempted to flip. And what you're doing every time you pick it up is you're kind of putting a pause on that cook again. Let it go for a little bit. Get that Maillard effect going. Get that caramelization effect going. You get that beautiful, beautiful crust. And then only when you get that one side exactly as crusty as you want it, then do you want to flip it. That second side is going to take less time because that first side, you've already kind of cooked it probably halfway through, depending on how well you're wanting things to go. But I'm glad you discovered that, even if by accident. Thing I wanted to talk about is just a random thing. I don't know how many people know this about me. I basically do not eat fast food. I haven't really eaten fast food in probably a couple of decades. It's not on my radar, to the extent that if somebody says, oh, my house is just like down the street, take a left when you get to the Wendy's, I would have no idea what you're talking about because I just don't even see them. But my blind spot and my exception is Arby's. I will eat Arby's 1 to 2 times a year. It's usually a weird extenuating circumstance where I'm just been working a 14-hour day and I'm exhausted or I'm traveling somewhere. And if I eat Arby's, I have to eat it in my car because that's another food rule of mine is that I never eat a meal in my car. So I figured if I'm going to break a rule, I'm going to go ahead and just do it all the way. So I will sit in the driver's side of my car and eat some Arby's. And that's my, it's not even a guilty pleasure. It's just like a weird little annual ritual that I have anymore.
Well, here's what I want to have happen is, show up to an event like a Comic-Con and Ving Rhames is there. And I want to hear you tell him that story.
I'd like to tell Ving Rhames anything. If I could meet the guy, that'd be cool.
Well, let's move into news predictions, kind of rolling back to the Met Gala. I feel like there's going to be a lot of news that will have come out of that, including that, as it turns out, even though he was able to do 3 different outfit changes, that Lil Nas X was secretly the baby that Frank Ocean took to the Met Gala.
That seems legit. In a similar way, my prediction is that news is going to come out that that was not actually Kim Kardashian in that all black outfit. In fact, it was a Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene with a whole bunch of padding in strategic places, because she secretly wants to be a cultural elite, but could not be seen dead, in a place full of, left-wing queer weirdos. But that was definitely Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I believe it. Well, as we move into pandemic advice, as always, the advice for this episode is... And, you know, the one other piece of advice I would have is it is okay to feel afraid and feel kind of stressed out. Just do what you can to take care of your mental health. That's all. You can, you know, your feelings are valid. Just take care of yourself, you know, find some things for your, you know, that'll make you feel better, that'll bring you some joy, and, you know, be safe while you're doing that.
Yeah. And I'll add to that, you know, if you have the capacity to do so, take care of other people, because very often taking care of other people is its own form of therapy.
And with that, it brings this episode to a close. This has been episode 29 of Advanced D&D, a podcast hosted by WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. We will see you next time, and maybe we'll talk even more about the Met Gala.
Oh, if only.